Chapter 10. Coriolanus knew bombs, and they terrified him. Even as the impact threw him off his feet and tossed him farther into the arena, his arms lifted to cover his head. When he hit the ground, he automatically flattened onto his belly, cheek pressed into the dust, one arm bent up to guard his exposed eye and ear. The first explosion, which seemed to come from the main gate, initiated a chain of eruptions around the arena. Running was out of the question. It was all he could do to cling to the rumbling ground, hope for it to stop, and try to keep his panic in check. He entered what he and Tigris had nicknamed bomb time, that surreal period when moments stretched and contracted in ways that seemed to defy science. During the war, the capital had assigned every citizen a shelter near their residence. The Snow's magnificent building had a basement level so sturdy and spacious it accommodated not only its residents but half the block. Unfortunately, the capital's surveillance system depended heavily on electricity. With the power sketchy and the grid flickering on and off like a firefly due to rebel interference in District 5, the sirens were unreliable, and they were often caught unawares with no time to retreat to the basement. At these times, he and Tigris and the Grand Mam, unless she was singing the anthem, would hide under the dining table, an impressive thing carved from a single block of marble, which sat in an interior room. Even with the absence of windows and the solid rock over his head, Coriolanus's muscles always went rigid with terror when he heard the whistling of the bombs, and it would be hours before he felt he could walk right. The streets weren't safe either, nor the academy. You could be bombed anywhere. But usually he had a better place to shelter than this. Now, naked to the attack, lying in the open air, he waited for the interminable bomb time to end and wondered how much damage his internal organs were incurring. No hovercraft. The realization bubbled up in his brain. There had been no hovercraft. These bombs had been planted then? He could smell smoke, so some of them were probably incendiary. He pressed his daily handkerchief over his mouth and nose. Squinting through the black haze thickened with dirt from the arena, he could see Lucy Gray about 15 feet away, curled up in a ball, forehead on the ground and fingertips lodged in her ears, which was the best she could do with the cuffs on. She coughed helplessly. "Cover your face! Use the napkin!" he called out. She didn't look over but must have heard because she rolled to her side and retrieved it from her pocket. The biscuits and chicken fell to the ground as she pressed the cloth to her face. She had a vague thought that this would not be conducive to her singing. A lull fooled him into thinking the episode had ended, but just as he lifted his head, a final explosion in the stands above him demolished what had once been a snack stand, that pink spun sugar, those caramel-coated apples, and burning debris rained down on him. Something struck his head hard, and the heavy weight of a beam landed diagonally across his back, pinning him to the ground. Stunned, Coriolanus lay almost senseless for a bit. The acrid smell of burning stung his nose, and he realized the beam was on fire. He tried to pull himself together and wriggle free, but the world swam and the peach pie turned sour in his stomach. "Help!" he cried. Similar pleas came from around him, but he couldn't see the injured through the cloud. "Help!" The fire singed his hair, and with renewed effort he tried to struggle from under the beam, to no avail. A searing pain began to eat into his neck and shoulder as the horrifying realization that he was burning to death overtook him. He screamed again and again, but seemed alone in a bubble of dark smoke and flaming rubble. Then he could make out a figure rising from the inferno. Lucy Gray said his name, then snapped her head around, something out of his view catching her attention. Her feet took a few steps away from him, then she hesitated, apparently torn. "Lucy Gray!" he pleaded in a ragged voice. "Please!" She gave a last look at whatever had tempted her and ran to his side. The beam shifted off his back, but then slammed down again. It rose a second time, leaving him just enough room to drag himself from beneath it. She helped him to his feet, and with his arms slung across her shoulders, They limped away from the flames until they collapsed somewhere in the middle of the arena. At first, coughing and gagging required all his attention, but he slowly registered the pain in his head, the burns along his neck, back, and shoulders. Somehow, his fingers were knotted in Lucy Gray's scorched skirt as if it were his lifeline. Her cuffed hands, visibly burned, curled nearby. The smoke settled enough that he could see the pattern the bombs had been planted in at intervals around the arena, with the motherload of explosives placed at the entrance. So great was the damage there that he caught a glimpse of the street beyond and two forms fleeing the arena. Was that what had given Lucy Gray pause before she came to his aid? The possibility of escape? Other tributes had surely availed themselves of the opportunity. Yes, he heard the sirens now, the shouts from the street. Medics picked their way over the rubble and ran for the wounded. "It's okay," he told Lucy Gray. "Help is here." Hands reached for him, settled him onto a stretcher. He released her ruffles, thinking there would be another stretcher for her, but as they carried him off, he could see a peacekeeper force her to her stomach and jam the barrel of a gun into her neck, yelling a string of profanities at her. "Lucy Gray!" Coriolanus cried out. No one paid any attention to him. The blow to his head made concentration hard, but he was aware of the ambulance ride, banging through the doors to the same waiting area where he'd drunk his fizzy lemon soda just a day before, and then being moved onto a table under a bright light while a team of doctors tried to assess the damage. He wanted to sleep, but they kept pushing their faces into his and demanding answers, their stale lunch breath making him queasy again. Into machines, out of machines, needles jabbing him, and finally, blissfully, being allowed to drift off. Periodically throughout the night, someone would wake him and shine lights in his eyes. As long as he could answer a few basic questions, they let him fall back into oblivion. When he finally woke, really woke, on Sunday, the light through the window said afternoon, and the grandmam and tigress were leaning over him with worried looks. He felt a warm reassurance. "I'm not alone," he thought. "I'm not in the arena. I'm safe." "Hi, Corio," said Tigress. "It's us." "Hello." He attempted a smile. "You missed bomb time." "Turns out it's worse than being there," said Tigress, "knowing you were going through it all alone." "I wasn't alone," he said. The morphling and the concussion made it hard to recall things clearly. "Lucy Gray was there. She saved my life, I think." He couldn't quite get his mind around the idea. Sweet, but unsettling, too. Tigress gave his hand a squeeze. "I'm not surprised. She's obviously a good person. Right from the beginning, she tried to protect you from the other tributes." The grandmam needed more convincing. After he'd patched together a timeline of the bombing for her, she came to this conclusion.
"Well, like as not, she decided the peacekeepers would gun her down if she ran. But still, it shows some character. Perhaps, as she claims, she is not really district."
High praise indeed. Or as high as the grandmam was likely to muster. As Tigress filled him in on the details he had missed, he realized how on edge this event had made the Capitol. What had happened, at least what the Capitol News claimed had happened, frightened citizens with both its immediate fallout and its ramifications for the future. They didn't know who had set the bombs. Rebels, yes, but from where? They could have been from any of the 12 districts, or a ragtag bunch that had escaped from District 13, or even, fate forbid, some long-dormant cell in the Capitol itself. The timeline for the crime was baffling. Since the arena stood empty, locked, and ignored between Hunger Games, the bombs could have been placed 6 days or 6 months before. Security cameras covered the entrances around the oval, but the crumbling exterior made scaling the structure possible. They didn't even know if the bombs had been triggered remotely or by a false step, but the unexpected losses shook the Capitol to its core. That the two tributes from District 6 had been killed by shrapnel caused little concern, but the same explosion had taken the lives of the Ring twins. Three mentors had been hospitalized, Coriolanus and Androcles Anderson and Gaius Breen, who'd been assigned the District 9 tributes. His two classmates were in critical condition, Gaius having lost both his legs, and almost everyone else, whether mentor, tribute, or peacekeeper, had needed medical care of some sort. Coriolanus felt bewildered. He genuinely liked Paolo and Didi, how they doted on each other, how upbeat they'd been. Somewhere nearby, Androcles, who aspired to be a reporter at Capital News like his mother, and Gaius, a Citadel brat with an endless supply of terrible jokes, were barely hanging on to life. What about Lysistrata? Is she all right? She'd been behind him. The grandmam looked uncomfortable.
Oh, her. She's fine. She's going around saying that big ugly boy from District 12 protected her by throwing his body over her, but who knows? The Vickers family loves the spotlight.
Do they? Asked Coriolanus skeptically. He could not recall, not once, ever seeing Vickers in the spotlight, except for a brief annual news conference in which they gave President Ravenstill a clean bill of health. Lysistrata was a self-contained, efficient person who never drew attention to herself. To even suggest she could be put in the same class as Arachne rubbed him the wrong way.
She only made one quick statement to a reporter right after the bombing. I expect it was the truth, Grandmam, said Tigris. Perhaps the people of District 12 are not quite so bad as you paint them. Both Jessup and Lucy Gray have behaved bravely.
Have you seen Lucy Gray? On the television, I mean. Does she look all right? He asked.
I don't know, Corio. They haven't shown any footage of the zoo, but she's not on the list of the dead tributes, said Tigris.
Are there more than the ones from District 6? Coriolanus didn't want to sound morbid, but they were Lucy Gray's competition.
Yes, some others died after the bombing, Tigris told him.